This meeting of the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee will come to order. It is now 8:02 a.m. on Thursday, March 23rd in the State Capitol Room. We're in room 106 today. Our members present are Representative Westlake, Representative Sadler, Representative Tallarico, Co-Chair Representative Parrish, and myself, Representative Fansler. We have a quorum to conduct business. As a reminder, if everyone can please take the time to silence your cell phones for the duration of the meeting, that would be great. Thank you very much. And before we begin, I would like to thank Lori Rowland, the House Community and Regional Affairs Secretary, and also Alex Giudice from the Juno LIO, who make sure that we have sound and a transcript for our committee meetings. My committee aide, Joe Yorty, is here to help with any member needs for this committee meeting. Today, we have two orders of business. We're going to be having the second hearing of House Bill 166, which is our museum construction grant program. And then we'll also be having the first hearing of House Bill 156, the municipal tax exemption for economic development property. It's my intent to pass House Bill 166 out of the committee today and hold House Bill 156 for a second hearing at our next committee meeting on Tuesday, March 28th. I'd also like to recognize that Representative Drummond has just joined us at 8:03. We have the bill's sponsor, Representative Parrish, his staff, Ms. Lisa Wuerl, as well as Ms. Catherine Eldemar here as the director of the department.
This conference may be recorded.
No worries. The director of Department for Community and Regional Affairs is also online to answer any questions that the committee may have. Last time we left off with questions, so we will start there again. Is there any questions? Are there any questions or further discussion from the committee? Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair to the sponsor, I wonder if you've had the opportunity to get information about how the State Libraries, Archives, and Museum Building, colloquially known as the SLAM, was funded. Construction.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, it is.
Your name is
yes, Lisa Wuerl, for the record, staff to Representative Parrish. Representative Sadler, my understanding is that this program, just to clarify, this program the SLAM would not be eligible for under this program. It is a different program. It is special, as is a state library. But to answer your question, it was funded over a number of years through some different capital project. Yes, the capital project funding. If you would like more details into the history of that, we have Patience Fredrickson from the director of the libraries, archives, libraries, and museums here as well in the room.
But again, it's not strictly germane.
Can you represent the parish
for the record?
Sure, I would like to actually get that information. This is a recent large construction of a museum, and it would help establish some of the precedent for how museums have been funded in the past. This proposes to have a new funding mechanism. I think it's good to understand the current landscape before we change that landscape. So yes, I would. I think it is germane. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Sadler. Before we bring up anyone else, are there any other questions for the bill sponsor or Ms. Wuerl? Yeah. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair to the sponsor, how much money would be available to museums seeking state support to construct new facilities?
Initially, zero. It'll be subject to future allocation. And I do not believe that the bill that Senator Stevens introduced and that I'm carrying on this side has dollar amounts in it.
So it's my understanding that this creates a fund but no funding, so this really does not advance unless there's more money appropriated at a later time?
That's correct.
Okay, fair enough. And through the chair?
Follow-up.
would you have any anticipation of proposing amendments to the budget to provide funding for such a fund in the future?
Through the chair, Representative Parrish to Representative Sadler. No. No, I know that there are a host of library, I'm sorry, potential museums which have put in applications. However, and, well, there have been a host which have put in requests. However, at the present time, I'm afraid our capital budget will remain constrained, unless, of course, a library should come to us, or a potential museum should come to us and say, look, we found 90% of the money. We just need the last 10% to get over the finish line. I would find that a pretty compelling case. But during the present time of austerity, I'm afraid even that would probably be turned down.
Well, follow-up, Representative Sadler.
My understanding is this would propose to have the state match local or tribal or independent organizations matching at a 50-50 basis. Are you actually saying it should be 90-10? Or?
No, actually. If you'll refer to the bill, you'll see that it doesn't, that 50-50 is the minimum participation from the local sources and the nonprofit sources, of course.
Okay.
And I would be inclined, if I were the department, to look more favorably upon those which were able to find a higher degree of outside participation.
Okay. Follow up, Representative Sadler.
I appreciate that. So there's no funding associated with this bill, and you don't plan to amend the budget to provide more funding. What actually does this bill accomplish?
And this bill opens the door, and municipalities will then have the option of attempting to persuade their representatives. I remember hearing some folks from your district just last time we heard this, will have occasion to try to persuade their representatives that it's a priority and should be a priority for the state.
Chairman, thank you.
And I would like to recognize Representative Tilton has joined us. Thank you, Representative. She'll be heard from very shortly. So, any follow-up, Representative Sadler?
Thank you. No.
No. Any other questions from the committee or further comments?
Actually, yes, I do, if I may.
Representative Sadler.
Certainly. Through the chair, to the sponsor, yesterday we heard that this is modeled on the successful library grants program, and I've some folks have done some checking. Have you any information to let confirm whether there have been grants issued through the library grant program upon which this bill is modeled?
Yes. I don't know if you have this in front of you yet,
okay,
but it's a list of libraries which have received grants under AS 3705315, Public Library Construction Grants to Municipalities. And you'll see there that we've got a library in Sutton, which received Buddy under the grad program, as well as several in the Matsu, on Kodiak, North Star, Fair. Well, in total, we received 27 applications and awarded 15 grants. And I say we a little bit liberally.
Any further questions or discussion for our bill sponsors?
Yeah.
Representative Rauscher.
So it's my understanding, through the chair, it's my understanding that there's no real grants given through the fund. They're just, it's kind of like a queue, where they sit there, and then if a legislator wants to support them later and write a piece of legislation to make that happen, is how that happens. Am I wrong or am I right?
it's my understanding, Justin Parrish, to Representative Rauscher through the chair. It's my understanding that it would be the prerogative of this legislature or future legislatures to put monies in the fund, which would then be distributed if a local museum or cultural institution, which focuses on displaying artifacts, were to surpass the 50% threshold, or reach or surpass the 50% threshold for alternate sources of funding. So the bill on its own does not allocate any money. It just says, here's a path. You can go down this path in the future if you can convince the legislature to go with you. And there are a lot of cultural institutions, museums, community groups, which are concerned about education for our children, tourism opportunities for our visitors, the preservation of our state's history, and our cultural enrichment, which will be making that argument in coming months and years.
Through the chair.
Follow-up, Representative Rauscher.
So basically, later on, money has to be negotiated by a legislator for this to happen. This is not a fund where money sits there waiting for the next project to come along.
To my understanding, Representative Rauscher, that's correct. Although, conceivably, money could be allocated to the fund, which would be insufficient to any given project. Or there could be money left over in the fund, which would not be after funding one, that would be insufficient. But I don't think this will ever become one of those funds which just sits there with a few million dollars and a low interest rate.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair to Representative Parrish. I'm looking more closely at the sheet you provided to us. The library grant program is outlined in AS 1456-355. And looking at the information on the sheet, it indicates that there have been, since FY11 to FY16, a total of zero grants awarded under 1456-355. Can you help me understand? My understanding had been, again, that the library grant program had not been utilized. You said that it had, but the information provided me said it has not. Can you help me reconcile that?
Sure. Although I'll let the department take a swing at this, first I'm going to, you have this sheet in front of you, I believe?
That's to which I've just made reference.
So if you look down to this line here, starting with 15, total award under AK 3705315, mm-hmm. grants to municipalities, and then the next line down, grants to municipalities, public library construction. So it's true, actually, that under AK 14.56.355, there have been no grants awarded. However, it's worth noting that the grants to municipalities, public library construction, has functioned in much the same way. Development under the public library construction, major expansion, or matching grant program, which is the which, if you look at the bottom, is the statute referenced. And with that, I'll hand it off to the department for any further clarification.
Follow-up, Representative Sadler.
I'll wait to ask the department.
Sounds like we have two questions now queuing. Is there any other discussion or questions for the bill sponsor? Okay. Seeing no more questions or discussion for the bill sponsor, what I'm going to do is we have two questions from Representative Sadler. If we can either have the department, they probably are the best to ask for this. So we do have Ms. Catherine Eldemar online for questions. She is the director of the Division of Community and Regional Affairs. Perhaps Representative Sadler, if you can ask her your questions.
Thank you. Ms. Eldemar, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Good morning. I apologize. I'm still pretty sick, so my voice is a little off. But good morning to you all.
Good morning. Thank you very much, and thanks for getting up off your sick bed. I appreciate the cards going around, so thank you for participating by teleconference. Believe me, I do appreciate that. So my question, Ms. Elmar, this is Representative Sadler through the chair to Catherine Elmar, is have there, in fact, been grants awarded for library construction through the public library construction and expansion grants laid out in AS 1456-355? Information before me indicates both zero, and then it also says one award under that section. So if you could help me understand what's actually going on there.
Very good. Through the chair, Representative Sadler, the library and major expansion matching grant program document that you have in front of you has fiscal years 2011 through 2016. And if you look under the column that's headed AS14.56.355, there are zeros in that entire column. And that is accurate. There has never been any funding under the library construction. I did mention it last time, and I thought there was a little bit of confusion, so I appreciate the opportunity to clarify. If you look at the next column and you look at the grants to municipalities, that's under AS37.05.315, and that's a total of 15 grants that were awarded. So I'm hoping that's helpful.
Right. No, thank you. Through the chair, that does help clarify that while there have been grants to municipalities, some of which may have been used for libraries or museums, the actual program, the Public Library Construction and Expansion Grant Program 355, has not been utilized. If you have access to this same sheet with to which you referred about the columns, there's another line in the middle of the page that says one awards under AK 1456-355, Public Construction Major Expansion Matching Grant Program. Help me understand. I thought that's the same section. So has there actually been one awards?
Oh, I'm sorry. That must be a misprint. I'm sorry about that. No, we have zero awards underneath the library construction.
Okay, so that should be a zero instead of a one, correct?
It should be a zero. Thank you for pointing that out.
That's okay.
We'll correct that record here on the side.
Just trying to make sure I understand it. And actually, Ms. Elmer, while you're on the line, I wonder if I could ask you, could you help me understand how the SLAM was funded, its construction was funded?
So the SLAM, I understand the SLAM is, I have a cheat sheet here. The SLAM is a $37.5 million project, and it looks like it went through the capital project. But we're trying to get that information. Our computers have been down, so I apologize. We don't have that all to you. We're scrambling, but we were without all of our data. And we can get that to you, however.
I appreciate that. So I think somebody contradict me if I'm incorrect, but so the state paid much, if not all, the cost for the State Library Museum and Archive building, the SLAM building. We are envisioning creating a program under which the state would offer 50% of the funding for future museum construction elsewhere in the state, but there's no funding available to it at this point. Is that a fair statement?
I believe that is an accurate statement, okay. But I can follow up with a written document just so the committee has that for its record.
I sure appreciate that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thanks, Ms. Elmar. I hope you feel better.
Thank you.
And Representative Drummond, I believe, may have some more hardcore information that will further this debate. Representative Drummond.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The SLAM, the State Library is funded through the Department of Education and Early Development. And I did leave momentarily to go into my office and get my iPad, and it is in the capital budget, Senate Bill 119, which passed in late 2014, I believe. And it's in there on page 50, line 25. For $37.5 million, State Library Archives and Museum Facility Construction Funding, House Districts 1 to 40. It's considered a statewide project, apparently. And I can't tell from this. I'd have to look in previous capital budgets to see if there were other phases funded. I do believe it was begun in as early as 2013 and maybe earlier. So there's probably earlier funding. But that would take a search of another capital budget. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Drummond.
All right. Are there any further questions or comments from this committee? Representative Rauscher.
Yeah. Through the chair, has money ever sat in the library fund?
Representative Parrish, would you like to handle this, or?
With respect, Mr. Chair, I'd rather defer it to the department.
Okay. I thought maybe your raising of your finger was a volunteer. Perhaps Ms. Eldemar, can you handle that question that we just had from Representative Rauscher?
Yes, through the chair. We have not received any funds to sit in any account. The DCRA has not had any funding for the library that just have been in our account. So we don't have any money.
Follow-up?
Yes, we don't. I heard her say we don't have any money in there, and I just want to know: has any money ever just been put in there for projects that may come along in the history of this fund?
No, in the history of this fund, there's no account just waiting there to be spent.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further comments or questions for the department or the bill sponsors? Okay, seeing none, we did have public testimony already on this, but I am never inclined to cut short public testimony, so is there anyone, it doesn't look like we have anyone online that wishes to talk to this bill, unless Mr. McGee wishes to. Mr. McGee, are you wanting to testify on public testimony?
I have a comment on this bill.
Okay. We will move you to 156 then. And is there anyone in this room wishing to testify? Okay. Then we do not need to open or close public testimony. Is there any final discussion regarding this bill? If not, I will entertain a motion.
Brief at ease.
All right, any further discussion, comments, questions? Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at the first handout on the side that has FY11 Library Construction Major Expansion Matching Grant Program. And this is titled, actually, Administration of Grants and Grants Municipalities. So my question to the sponsor, through the chair, is, I don't have to read through this all. Have any of these projects on the sheet actually are considered museums?
No, I believe sorry. Justin Parrish, representative for District 34, through the chair to Representative Sadler. I believe that if you look down the list, you'll see that they're all libraries. Well, with the possible exception of the Walter Sobolev Center.
Okay. And so I get the follow-up question.
Follow-up, Representative Sadler.
Thank you. So my question is this: is there anything that prevents museums from obtaining state grants through the program outlined in
3705315? Mr. Chair, I'd like to punt that one to the department.
Okay. Ms. Eldemar, do you want to handle that one?
Certainly. There is nothing preventing the legislature from making a grant award under 3705315. Absent this bill, if this bill will not pass, they could still go ahead and seek funding underneath AS 3705.
Follow?
Nope, I think that says it all.
All right. If there is no further discussion or questions, I will ask for a motion to pass this bill out of committee. Representative Westlake.
Yes, sir. I move to report House Bill 166, version 30-LS0411-D, from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, the motion to pass HB 166, version 30-LS0411-D from the committee carries. All right. We'll now take a brief at ease to sign all of our bill documents. We are at ease. Back. And our second order of business now, we have before us House Bill 156, Version A. Representative Tilton and her staff, Mr. Heath Hilliard, are here to present the bill. If you could please put yourself on the record and begin your presentation.
Great. I'm Representative Kathy Tilton, House District 12.
Heath Hilliard, staff to Representative Kathy Tilton.
Well, good morning, everyone. Good morning, Dick Kutcher's, Banslow and Parrish, and members of the committee. It is really nice to be in front of the CRA committee, the committee that I chaired last year. And so this bill may be familiar to some of you who saw it last year. It is HB 156 is the reintroduction of HB 370, which was sponsored by the committee in the 29th legislature. What the HB 156 does is it provides a non-monetary tool for municipalities to incentivize new economic development. It amends current statute for greater flexibility for our municipalities to determine their property tax policy. The statute's been in place since 1993, but it's rarely been used because it's a little bit over-restrictive. Some of the projects that have been used under this statute are the Alaska Brewery here in Juneau and the MTA Sports Center in Palmer. But because of the rigidness of the current policy, it has been harder for larger dollar projects to be able to use the policy that we have in place and for more capital incentive type projects. So with your permission, Co-Chairs Banslow and Parrish, I am going to leave the bill in the capable hands of my staff, Heath Hilliard, as I have another commitment, and I think he'll be able to answer all your questions.
Thank you very much, Representative Tilton.
Thank you.
Mr. Hilliard.
Yes, again for the record, Heath Hilliard, staff to Representative Tilton. Appreciate the opportunity to present this to you today. This was, again, as she referenced, this was a CRA committee bill in the 29th legislature, and I believe the last time I had the opportunity to present before the CRA committee was actually on this bill from last year. As she alluded to, yes, this is an amendment to existing statute that is designed for an optional municipal property tax exemption to incentivize economic development projects. And again, as Representative Tilton indicated, she gave you several examples of where this particular exemption had been used. If you look in Alaska statute, the 2945050, this is subsection M. There are subsections on various optional property tax exemptions that go all the way through the letter X. Some of them are charitable, and this one is really considered an investment property tax exemption. Again, it has been used on several occasions, but not nearly as frequently as a number of municipalities would like because it's overly narrow. And so what this bill proposes to do is to offer some first of all, two things. The current provision is that a municipality may only do a deferral or exemption for a five-year period and then a follow-up five-year extension. And what this bill proposes to do is to leave the determination in the hands of the Assembly or the Council. Simply say that there is no specific time limit. Use whatever time limit is relevant and useful for a particular project you're trying to incentivize. Furthermore, back on page 2, primarily, there are also some different standards in which this can be utilized. The primary one that has not been used in the same trade or business from another municipality for at least 6 months before the application for the deferral or exemption. The property has not been previously been taxed as real personal property in the municipality. the property is used in a trader business in a way that creates employment in the municipality, generates sales outside of the municipality, material reduces the importation of goods or services, and so on and so forth. So the whole intention here is it's an optional tax exemption that a municipality can utilize to incentivize a larger project. And I know that we have, I believe, Mr. Schutte from the Municipality of Anchorage, who's online to talk about potentially some of the projects the Municipality of Anchorage would like to use this for. The reason I have the slide up that I put the insert and I have it projected, the one thing I want this committee to understand, and this was something that the CRA committee in the 29th legislature wrestled with, and I believe Representative Drummond will remember this conversation, was ensuring that the impact of this optional tax exemption does not in any way injure or free the education obligation for municipality. And that was, if you look on page one, that whole section starting on line six, that language that's being deleted from the statute, that really is deleting that five-year, that initial five-year period and that five-year exemption. And because because we are removing that five-year limitation, this slide that's being projected shows what it currently looks like. So from years one through five, the municipality could, if it chose to, exempt the entirety of the property tax on the particular property for which this applies. But after year five, it could not exempt the portion that is assigned for education. What this bill does now with this new language is simply says the municipality can exempt the entirety if it so chooses, but we're leaving it in the hands of the municipality. We're leaving it in the hands of the assembly. So this does not impact or free the obligation for education funding. It simply says assembly, city council, it's up to you to choose, and if you so choose to exempt or defer that portion of property tax, then you have to figure out a way to pay for it somewhere else. So I guess with that, I'd be happy to take any questions, and I think we have Marty McGee, the state assessor, online to answer questions about tax implications for municipalities, and I believe, again, other people from the Municipality of Anchorage have called to testify in support of this.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Hilliard. Are there any questions or comments from the committee for our bill presenter? Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it would be my expectation that going forward, you would see municipalities competing for the relatively mobile businesses, which could set up shop in any town in Alaska. would that be your expectation as well?
Through the co-chair, to co-chair Parrish, I don't know if I totally understand your question. Is your question envisioning that, for instance, there might be a circumstance in which two municipalities might be competing for the same project? Was that the nature of your question?
Yes.
Through the chair, co-chair Parrish, I suppose that's possible. In the circumstances of the municipalities that we have spoken with, particularly Municipality of Anchorage and then Municipality of Seward or City of Seward last year, that was not the case, but I certainly don't. I mean, I could see that being possible. I could see that occurring, but what's on the time horizon right now? I don't see any projects of that nature, but it certainly could.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in that scenario, one of the differences between this proposed amendment and the current law is that the municipality would be able to give up the portion of property taxes that would normally go to funding schools after the first five-year period was over. Is that also accurate?
Through the chair, co-chair Parrish, yes, this would eliminate those two five-year, the initial five-year period and the five-year extension. It would be time certain as determined by municipal assembly or city council. And again, it would not free them from their obligation to fund schools. It would simply say if they chose to exempt that portion of property tax, they would have to find a way to fund it somewhere to provide that education funding somewhere else.
Follow up? Most likely by raising property taxes on the other businesses and property owners in the area.
Through the chair, Coach Harris, that is one option. Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Representative Rauscher, then Representative Sadler.
So, through the chair, does the state of Alaska micromanage the ability for all municipalities to exempt certain properties?
Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, actually that's what the entirety of this title of statute 2945050 is. There, again, exemptions A through X, any number of things. There's an exemption, a partial property tax exemption for buildings used exclusively for farming. There's a property tax, an optional property tax exemption for the widow or widower of a member of the armed services of the United States. There's a whole host of a variety of property tax exemptions. This is one of the ones that I've been able to identify that really are, you would consider essentially an investment optional tax exemption rather than a charitable optional tax exemption. So again, the statute, this whole 2945050, they're all entirely optional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just find it odd that we micromanage that much into a municipality's business, that's all.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair to Mr. Hilliard, I also have the same kind of question that this might potentially allow, for example, a situation in Mat-Su. If there was a potential new store, a new Walmart or a new Ice Sheet or something, the community of Palmer and the community of Wasilla might each want it, and they might compete with each other to lower their, to expand their property tax exemption to make it more attractive to invest in their location versus their competitor's location. Under the current law, there's a 5-year limit, so this does give more responsibility to the local municipalities or your communities to say, it's on you guys if you want to lower the, if you want to expand that exemption, forgo that tax revenue, betting on the come that you'll get more investment and more economic activity. It's on you, but it gives you more responsibility and more leeway. I shouldn't ask if there's any particular situation you envision that happening, but I think this does return some more discretion and more power to the municipalities, and the government's good that's close to the people, so that's a good thing. So it's a comment, not a question, sir.
Thank you very much. Representative Drummond.
I think the, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the Mat-Su Borough is the property taxing entity north of Anchorage, and the cities of Palmer, Wasilla, Houston, et cetera, have sales taxes in place. I believe that is the how it's set up out there. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was just a comment.
Just a comment. Okay. Thank you, Representative Drummond. Are there any other questions or comments from... All right.
Excuse me.
Representative Drummond.
In that case, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Since this is an act relating to a municipal tax exemption or deferral, does it only apply to municipalities or boroughs that also levy property taxes? May boroughs also take advantage of this exemption?
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, my understanding, and I think Mr. McGee would be perhaps better to answer that, but my understanding is that any municipality, whether it be a borough or a city, that does do property tax, that does levy property taxes, could use this exemption. And if they levy property taxes, this would apply to that municipality, whether borough or city.
Okay, you're right. Let's ask the expert. Thank you.
All right. Well, it looks like we have no further comments or questions.
Hello, this is Marty McGee.
From the committee. Yes, Mr. McGee, we are coming up to your testimony here, if that's okay.
Okay.
Without any further questions, we're going to hold that one. We're going to now go to our first invited testifier today. First, we're going to hear from Ms. Susie Schutz from the LAA Drafter. Ms. Schutz, if you can please state your name and affiliation for the record, and then go ahead with your testimony.
This is Susie Schutz with Legislative Legal Services. I just wanted to be available for any questions regarding the bill.
Okay, sounds great. Are there any questions for Ms. Schutz? It sounds like Representative Westlake.
Yes, thank you, through the chair. Legal Services, while we have you on here, Representative Drummond had a very interesting question, because this seems very good, removing that limitation, but if you heard the question, it was municipalities and the distinction between them and boroughs. Do you think this is a one-size-fit-all, or should perhaps boroughs also be addressed in the same thing here? Thank you.
To the chair, Representative Westlake, this is Susie Schutz, again with Legislative Legal Services. Municipality as used here would include a borough or a city. So if that borough would be levied a property tax, they would be subject to this provision.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any further questions right now for Ms. Schutz? All right, seeing none, we will ask Ms. Schutz if you can stay on the line in case further questions come up. That would be excellent. And now we will go next to Mr. Marty McGee, the state assessor. Mr. McGee, if you can please state your name and affiliation for the record, and then you can go ahead with your testimony.
Hello, my name is Marty McGee. I'm the state assessor. I'm inside the Division of Community and Regional Affairs. I have a couple of comments to offer, hopefully facilitate the discussion. Two parts of the law are affected by the bill as amended. 050M and 030A. In general, 050M are optional exemptions. So the basic theory on taxation is that all property is subject to taxation except that which is excluded or exempted by law. So these two sections of the law create the opportunities for exemptions. The optional exemptions are a choice of the local government, and the mandatory exemptions, which are generally covered in 030, are required. And so the local government has no option as to whether or not that exemption is given or not. So the bill has amended. The original fiscal note that we filed on this bill was prior to the amendment and it showed no fiscal impact. The bill as amended does have a fiscal impact. Property exempted under the optional exemptions, M, would be added back into the full value determination, and it does affect the school funding formula. So as amended, this bill would add back for one single community about $70,000 of obligation that shifts to the state if the bill passes in its present form. It has to do with the shipyard exemption, which is noted in the bill. The bill also extends the exemption, which is a mandatory exemption, for certain property owned by ADA at the Red Dog Mine near Kotzebue. So it extends that for an additional 10 years. So the bill as amended has a bigger consequence than the original form of the bill.
Thank you. And we have a question from Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. McGee, would you please be so good as to send your comments in writing to the committee?
Yes.
Thank you.
Are there any further questions for Mr. McGee? Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. McGee, through the chair, not specific to this bill, but just to property tax exemptions in general, is it a fair statement to make that giving an exemption to one property taxpayer shifts the burden of providing public services to other taxpayers? Is that just a...
Generally, that's correct in terms of tax policy. That's the result.
Okay. But that's something that the local authorities would certainly consider as they made the policy decision whether or not the economic investment, economic development opportunities outweighed any cost there. I suppose that's their local decision. That's yes. a comment, not requiring an answer. Another question specifically, Representative Drummond said earlier that the communities of the City of Palmer and the City of Wasilla are not property taxing authorities, that the property taxation authorities and the Matt Nuisance is a borough. Is that correct? Just want to confirm that.
I have to give you a more complex answer, unfortunately. The taxing authority belongs with the borough. That's part of the way the structure is set up. Local city governments can add additional millage or in certain cases have additional exemptions. So they do have the authority. City of Wasilla, as an example, has no specific millage associated with the operation of the City of Wasilla at this time, but historically they did, and in the future they could if they needed to.
Okay, fair enough. And so maybe my example might have been more properly constructed as a competition between the municipality of Anchorage and the Matanuska City Borough for competition for something. But okay, that makes the point. Thank you.
As we look at the tax policy issue, that's the more common thing that happens across the United States. Another example potentially is the two airports at Anchorage and Fairbanks. Looking to do some kind of economic development project, and whoever was doing that would look for the best deal they could at whichever airport was offered to them.
If I could follow up,
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Since we're having a discussion, I grew up in Rust Belt, Ohio, and there was frequently competition between Ohio, Michigan, and Indiana to see who could offer the most attractive property tax exemptions and for how long. And after 5, 10, 20 years, sometimes there was buyer's remorse that, geez, we gave Nissan or Datsun a tax exemption, and 20 years later, we're still not getting taxes from them, but we're having to provide fire, police, you know, all that kind of services. So in the heat of the bidding competition, it's sometimes easy to lose track of the fact that you're going to be foregoing tax for a long time. Yeah. But that's a comment. Thank you.
Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. McGee, I'm trying to understand where in this bill there's an increased obligation to the state for school funding. Would you please walk me through that again?
As a local government chooses to expand a optional exemption, that optional exemption is added back, the value of the property exempted is added back to the full value determination, which is part of the school funding formula. It's not as explicit in this bill as it might be. What is happening here is a proposal, an amendment, would make the exemption of the shipyard in Ketchikan a mandatory exemption. So that would not be added back, and that would not be in the school funding calculation, and that effectively shifts $72,000 of school funding obligation from the borough to the state.
If we can possibly take a have some clarification here, Mr. Hilliard, could you speak to that if you could?
Thank you. Again, for the record, Heath Hilliard, staff to Representative Tilton. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. The confusion is stemming from the fact that Mr. McGee is referring to a potential amendment package that we had been working on with Representative Westlake's office that, based on that determination, and that there would be a fiscal impact with regard to the exemption pertaining to the shipyard in Ketchikan. Representative Westlake, and I don't want to speak for you, sir, but between the discussion between our offices, he chose not to offer and look for an additional vehicle. So Mr. McGee is referring to something that is not in the bill before you and actually will not be proposed, at least to my knowledge at this time, will not be proposed because of its potential implication to this bill. And so I believe that Mr. McGee and I are still functionally saying the same thing with regard to the version before you, which is it does not free the obligation to fund education from the municipality. It simply says if the municipality chooses to exempt that portion of the property tax that goes to fund education, they have to find another way to fund their education obligation. So it's up to the municipality to determine.
Mr. McGee, could you speak to Mr. Hilliard's comments?
So if the amendment is not functional in this version, then any comment associated with it is irrelevant, and I'll retract it. The part of the which is functional is that the school funding millage is now removed and the local government can exempt that portion of the amount of tax associated with economic exemption development projects. Still has a fiscal impact, but I can't calculate it in the current form.
Okay, hopefully that clears any confusion up we have. We have Representative Rauscher, then followed by Representative Parrish.
I'm going to hold my question for later.
Okay, Representative Rauscher is going to pass. Representative Parrish.
So would it be correct that if this bill had been, as amended, had been in effect when the shipyard was going in, and if it had received the exemption laid out in this bill for, say, a 25-year period, then the fiscal impact to the state would be similar to what you outlined, or is that wrong?
Through the chair, Representative Parrish, I really couldn't speak to it because under the provisions of the bill before you, the shipyard would not have the exemption. That was the nature of, correct me if I'm wrong, of Representative Westlake's amendment package that he chose not to offer, that there needed to be a clear and specific exemption for the shipyard, and because there was going to be a fiscal implication, the amendment was not put forward. Okay. So I'm not trying to be evasive. I don't know. I couldn't answer the question because this bill didn't envision that as it sits before you.
Thank you. And Mr. McGee, would you care to comment on that, or are you on the same page as our other presenter, Mr. Hilliard?
Generally, yes, I agree with Mr. Hilliard's comment. The nature of the exemption is the whole effect created. So if the exemption, if the all value, including that associated with education, is exempt by local option, then that value is added back in the full value determination, and there isn't any shift from the borough to the state government. If the exemption is mandatory, then there is a shift from local government obligation to state obligation.
Follow.
Thank you. That clears it up. It's my understanding that the bill we have in front of us right now does not have any mandatory obligations, and I'll let Mr. Hilliard answer that.
Through the chair, Representative Parrish, no, there is no mandatory exemption, and this is entirely optional.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hilliard, could you expand a little bit and just speak generally about what it would be considered economic development property? We might have our own ideas, but I want to make sure to put it to hear it in plain English.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, thank you for that question. And that language really is encompassed on the provisions on page 2, starting with line 11. Line 11 is current language in the statute, but then we went on further to offer some additional some circumstances. Does it create employment in the municipality? Does it generate sales outside of the municipality? Does it materially reduce the importation of goods or services from outside the municipality? Does it create jobs? Does it ultimately add back to the property tax base at the conclusion of the exemption or deferral? And that's the other thing I think that's important to recognize, is that this is not purely an exemption. It's also a deferral. It depends on what makes sense for the municipality and the entity business that is looking to do some kind of economic development project. The idea is to provide maximum flexibility in municipalities to work with the private business partners to make a package that makes sense. And to respond back to one of Representative Parrish's questions, yes, I mean, it very well could pass back for a time being onto the other existing property taxpayers. I mean, that's something the municipality assembly would have to consider. But we thought it would be better for the assemblies or the city councils to make that decision than the state.
Follow up, Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Just in discussion, yes, so understand that is within the purview of the local authorities, and that's good. And there is one of the options under M is that there might be an exemption with the provision that over time there would be a net benefit to the as you say, it's a deferral for a time certain, whatever that municipality decides. Is there any formal analysis or formal finding that over time there will be a net benefit to the community, or is that something that you can kind of feel organically?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I think the problem that we have is that the statute as it sits is sufficiently narrow that it hasn't been able to be used enough to really provide an analysis. I'm sure we could talk to, for instance, the city and borough of Juneau to determine whether or not the investment for the Alaska Brewing Company was a wise one. I'm fairly certain that it's penciled out over time, but perhaps Representative Parrish would be better able to speak to that. But, I mean, again, if it's not used very frequently, it's hard to know what the long-term implication would be.
And if I could
follow up, Representative Sadler.
If there's a tell us a story, what would be a potential case in which this could be applied to benefit the municipality? What's your best case scenario for how this would play out?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, one such example that was brought to us last year when we introduced it to begin with was a major port expansion for the city of Seward. I believe we have Mr. Chris Schutte from the Municipality of Anchorage, the Office of Economic Development, that was going to talk about some projects that Municipality of Anchorage would like to use this for forthcoming. I believe one such example in Anchorage, had this been in place, could have been used to somehow incentivize or advance the Dave and Buster's project. That's one particular example that I believe it could be, but I think that particularly Municipality of Anchorage and I said the city of Seward, they were talking about a major port expansion. We're looking at municipalities wanting to use this expanded section for significant investment, infrastructure development types of projects, you know, major undertakings. So, again, I think Mr. Schutte might be a better person to give you an examples of what Municipality of Anchorage might be looking at.
Thank you. Representative Rauscher.
Yeah, through the chair, so how does this affect the state?
Is this a question for Mr. Hilliard? Or
No.
Okay, great question.
I just want to know why it's our business.
We'll throw this into the ether. Mr. Hilliard, if you want to take a crack at it, and then we'll give Mr. McGee a crack at it as well.
Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, I think that would be a question better posed for either Ms. Schutz or Mr. McGee.
Mr. McGee or Ms. Schutz, would you like to take a crack at this one?
This is Marty McGee. I'll respond. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Okay, through the chair. One of the committee members already brought up the issue, the larger tax policy issue of different taxing jurisdictions competing for economic development projects, which through the history of the United States has not had a good result, economic result for communities. So it is in the interest of the state that we avoid the potential for competition. That's one reason we try to make our tax laws uniform throughout the state. We also try to provide the opportunity for local governments to make their own choices about what they choose to exempt and not. A primary obligation of boroughs has always been funding for education. So through the whole history of the debate associated with this exemption, there's been concern that there's preservation of the tax base associated with education and that it's supported and funded. And that's one of the purposes of the full value determination, is to make sure that there's an equal effort being made by all communities to fund education throughout the state. So that's where we are. That's the evolution of the law and the intent in terms of tax policy.
Okay, thank you, Mr. McGee. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. McGee. I'm reading on page 2 of the bill, starting with line 11, and trying to read into it perhaps more than is there, but could you give me a potential example of real property that had been used in a different municipality? I'm just trying to understand if this is something that had been existing in one municipality and then jacked up and then driven to another municipality. I'm not quite sure why there is that specific mention of economic development property that may have been used in a different municipality at least 6 months before the application. I just don't get it.
Through the chair, I had to administer this exemption in Anchorage for 20 years, and it continuously created problems for us, interpretation of that specific language, because it's not very clear, and it wasn't clear in the legislative intent established as it was passed what was intended. Obviously, you can't move land, and it's difficult to move buildings, so that doesn't seem to be the logic. The logic is that if there's an existing industry, facilities, real estate associated with that industry, that a new person coming in trying to start up in the same industry with the same type of building doesn't get a tax advantage over the existing taxpayers. That's the way it's been interpreted in practice. But the language of the bill is awkward and has been problematic for 20 years that I'm aware of.
Okay. Another question, if I can follow up, I've got the floor. And I suppose a more careful reading on my part of the bill might answer this question for me, but I'm looking about, this is all for a property that exists within a specific property taxing governmental entity, like a borough or municipality or second or city or whatever. I'm just trying to envision that there might be a circumstance under which an economic development property might span across the borders of two different municipalities and how that might affect the application of this exemption. And if, Mr. Hilliard, if you've got an answer to it. And I'm going to go to, I don't know if there's a pipeline or a railroad or a transmission line or something that might be subject to property taxation in one jurisdiction but not another, even though it crosses the borders.
Mr. McGee, would you like to handle that one first?
I could give a specific example of the infrastructure that crosses, and that's the products pipeline for Tesoro. It goes from the Kenai Peninsula and the refinery in the Kiski to the port of Anchorage. It's been handled pretty straightforward, but there's the potential that Kenai could exempt their portion of the pipeline and Anchorage would tax their portion of the pipeline. And then there have always been issues about estimating value and what value you attribute to different parts of one piece of infrastructure. That's the only example I can think of. In general, in Alaska, our boroughs are large enough that we don't have this border issue, which is common in the lower United States, in smaller states and smaller taxing jurisdictions where, you're very close proximity and it's an easy choice of consumers to go to one or the other, or developers to locate in one place or the other and avoid taxation.
Okay. Mr. Hilliard, would you like to add to that, or you don't need to comment if you don't wish to?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, Mr. Chair. And it is true that this language, particularly the 11 through 16 language that is also part of the current statute, is very awkward and kind of clumsy, and that's something that Ms. Schutz and I discovered last year when working on this bill, 370. The language that's being removed with regard to the school funding portion, because we're allowing the municipality to make a determination, that one was equally awkward. In my understanding, she provided a memo with legislative history. That language was added in the Senate on a late night session near the end of session in, I believe, 1993, and so beyond what she could find in that legislative history, there was really no ruling to understand. Anyway, and so what Mr. McGee has also said is, yes, that language is fairly confounding. I guess I'm offering the opinion or offering a suggestion that perhaps the language in 11 through 16 is such to say that it would discourage a situation where someone might be offered, a business might be offered the exemption in one municipality, another municipality could come along 6 months later and offer an even sweeter property tax exemption and draw that away from the existing original municipality. That's conjecture. I don't have any basis, but I could see that language envisioning that circumstance. So, Mr. Chair, I apologize if I can't be offered any further precision.
Mr. Chair, I would just say that if it's existing law, if it ain't really broke that bad, don't fix it. So, but just I appreciate your reflection of the confoundingness of it.
All right. Any further? We're technically on questions for Mr. McGee. Any further questions for Mr. McGee directly? Okay. Seeing none, we're next going to go on to our more invited testimony. Next, we have Mr. Bryant
Robbins from the municipality of Anchorage. He's the assessor there. Mr. Robbins, could you please state your name and affiliation for the record and then go ahead with your testimony?
Hi, this is Bryant Robbins with the municipality of Anchorage. I'm the municipal assessor, and I am available for questions.
Okay. Any questions there, Representative Sadler?
Thank you, Mr. Bryant. Since you, Mr. Robbins, since you're online, I'll ask you this question. Do you have any information that would be helpful to this committee about potential projects that could that the municipality might potentially apply this exemption to? That give, I mean, the opportunity to say whether this bill would be quickly effective and useful in the municipality.
I do not, but I believe Mr. Schutte does.
All right. Mr. Schutte is actually next on the list, so any other questions right now for Mr. Robbins? Okay, seeing none, then we will move on next to Mr. Chris Schutte. He is the Director of Economic Development for the Municipality of Anchorage. Mr. Schutte, if you could please state your name and affiliation for the record, and then you can go ahead with your testimony.
Good morning, through the chair. My name is Chris Schutte, S-C-H-U-T-T-E. I'm the director of the Office of Economic and Community Development for the Municipality of Anchorage. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify this morning. It has been a very interesting exercise to participate in thus far and listen to the questions, all of which have been very, very good. As Mr. Hilliard has indicated, this is an idea and a bill that was worked on last year and was did not make it across the finish line, and therefore we had to try again this year. It's a very exciting piece of legislation for the city of Anchorage. It modifies the optional property tax exemption portion of state statute that will give our jurisdiction, the municipality of Anchorage, flexibility in creating some community and economic development incentives that help us achieve some of our community development goals and economic development goals. There's been some interesting conversation about the idea of competing for location of business, which I think is an interesting outcome. It's entirely possible, though largely not what we're interested in the city of Anchorage. Some of the other testimony you will hear after me are from partners in this effort here in the city of Anchorage, both the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation and Cook Inlet Housing Authority. One of the areas that we are focused internally is how do we help projects within the municipality of Anchorage get across the finish line. We've had a number of potential projects, primarily local projects. I heard mention of Dave and Buster's earlier. That certainly was one that this could have assisted, but we have a number of locally based businesses that are going through expansion or growth, looking at opportunities for new headquarters, new places of business, and in doing so are encountering some of the challenges inherent in developing in Anchorage these days, namely a shortage of easily developable land and a need to get creative in redevelopment or infill development in our community. How will this legislation help the city of Anchorage? By giving us the authority to create local incentivization language specific to our community needs, we will be better able to help incent the kind of outcomes we're looking for, whether it is to encourage mixed-use development that takes advantage of tough-to-develop infill sites here in the city, or for economic development projects that have a long-term payout for the community but don't quite pencil out in the short term. One example that comes to mind is the beverage distribution company Odom. Odom is now a national company, but they have long Alaska roots here in Anchorage. Right now, their distribution operation is spread across multiple locations in the city. They've been looking for years to consolidate to a single location and improve the efficiency of their operation. They did finally find a piece of land suitable to their needs. It's a former gravel pit and concrete manufacturing site. And as you can imagine, it's not in very good condition, and a lot of the required infrastructure, engineering, and road work that was required to develop this site was falling on their shoulders. This project would have been could have been helped to the tune of $4.5 million of required off-site infrastructure work if this legislation had been in place. The $4.5 million in work was a tipping point or a decision point for the Odom leadership, where they really had to seriously consider the long-term benefit to their own operation simply because they had to shoulder a cost that put the project out of reach. Another example will be some projects that you'll hear from Cook Inlet Housing, where the cost of housing in Anchorage is relatively high, not as high as Juneau, from what I hear, but definitely high. And this is one way in which the city, the municipality of Anchorage, will be able to help incentivize certain types of development, encouraging more dense development in our city, building up instead of building out, so that we can help make better utility of the land that we have left, but also can help encourage that outcome through incentivization. We're really excited to see this legislation go through. It's step one of a two-step process. That second step is to work with our local community to truly identify what our community development goals and objectives are and craft a program and criteria that's specific to our local needs. With that, I will turn it over for any questions. Thank you for the opportunity to speak this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Schutte. We have a question from Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Chris. Nice to hear your voice. I have a question. I'm trying to get my head around how an operation like Dave and Buster's would have fit the requirement of this bill had it passed. It's an entertainment facility, if I remember correctly, that was built in an existing large regional mall, the Diamond Center. How would this bill have helped those folks develop their property?
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, that's an excellent question. So one of the components of this bill that we see as being truly invaluable is on page 2, the section C, starting on line 27, that specifically allows a city to craft incentivization language that can help property redevelop or develop through offsetting some of the mandatory or required physical infrastructure expenses. So in the case of a Dave and Buster's at the Diamond Center here in Anchorage, what ended up happening is they were not required to do the off-site infrastructure we originally predicted they would need to do. But originally it looked like there was going to need to be some upgrades to both sewer transportation network, so the road network, et cetera, lots of off-site public-facing infrastructure needs that unfortunately fell to the project itself, since it was the trigger for these mandatory upgrades. At the end of the day, it worked out to where Dave & Buster's would not require that, so this particular clause of the bill would not have been triggered, but that's how sometimes a redevelopment project or a development project within an existing facility might trigger one of the clauses.
Okay, I see. It would be considered a redevelopment project in an existing facility.
Correct.
Okay, additional
follow-up
question?
Yes, absolutely.
You mentioned the Odom beverage distributors finding that road and utility work would have put their consolidation project out of reach. It's my understanding that the Natural Pantry, which built that beautiful new store at 36th and A Street, had to build the road and access all completely around the post office, I believe, and complete that entire access, even though it was not part of their property. Would this bill have helped them had it been in place at that time?
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, that's exactly correct. That's a great project that, because of its location, triggered a number of mandatory public infrastructure upgrades, that cost of which fell to the project itself. And so the road, I think I want to say it was $1.5 million of unanticipated cost to build out the road behind it. That's something that could have been absorbed through a property tax abatement or deferral plan that this bill will allow.
Follow-up?
Follow-up, Representative Drummond.
I wonder if there might be a retroactivity clause or something like that built in here that might help businesses like that after the fact. Does that make any sense at all?
Through the chair, Representative Drummond, I don't believe there's retroactivity in the current language, and I would be very reluctant to try and establish the criteria for retroactively granting property tax abatement or deferral.
Okay, then I don't want to get you in trouble, so thank you.
Thank you, Representative Drummond. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, and Mr. Schutte, as Economic Development Director, this question is probably better directed to you than to Mr. McGee, whose perspective as the tax assessor is of necessity a bit more limited. So I understand the city may make the decision to forego or exempt or defer property taxes. And I understand further that there's no specific requirement of a detailed finding that the net financial benefits of a property tax exemption under this bill would ever have to provide a net benefit in terms of tax revenue. Tax revenue is not the only or even the most important measure of the benefits of a law. In your purview, are the gaining of jobs, economic activity, giving people something to do, less tangible benefits of this kind of law, might those have a more effective, a more beneficial economic development impact than solely the measure of increase in property tax or deferral of property taxes?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, that is an excellent question. The power to exempt taxation through this bill will fall to local jurisdictions, as will a requirement that they craft their own criteria and their own measurements of success or ROI. For the city of Anchorage, we don't have it crafted yet since this has not been made law, but we would have clearly established criteria as well as metrics for evaluating any proposal for a tax abatement or tax deferral, so that we can measure both the long-term impact on the community, but also long-term benefit through increased property taxation, through jobs, through growth in other receipts such as the personal property tax, if it's a business that keeps inventories, if it's a business that would trigger any one of the other taxes locally. So yes, I think that each jurisdiction needs to do their own due diligence and have their own methodologies for evaluating these proposals as they come through the door that takes into account all of the underlying economic benefit.
Thank you very much, sir.
Any further questions from Mr. Schutte? Okay, seeing none, we will move along. Next, we will have Mr. Bill Popp, President of the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation. Mr. Popp, if you could please state your name and affiliation for the record, and then you can go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bill Popp, P-O-P-P. I am President and CEO of the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of this legislation. We believe that it is an important tool that is missing from the toolbox in terms of our ability as a city to attract new investment, in particular new lines of investment in businesses that currently do not exist in the city. I have a number of years of experience with this particular state statute. When I was a member of the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly, in the latter half of the 1990s, I sponsored and helped to shepherd through the adoption of a code, an economic development code, addition to our code of ordinances in the Kenai Peninsula Borough that mirrors this language. And to the best of my knowledge, it has never been used effectively in the history of that ordinance. That tends to indict, from my point of view, the failure of the current statute in its ability to do what it was intended to do. To the best of my knowledge, within the municipality of Anchorage, there has been no successful use of the current state statute either through the municipal code. Again, another indictment of the failure of this current statute being able to do what it needs to do. When we look at the national landscape of economic development strategies, there is admittedly a mixed bag of tricks in regards to the success of incentives across the country. But in communities and states that are thoughtful in the use of incentives, in the way that they are targeted and transparent, in the way that they are set up to incur new economic development, creation of jobs, creation of new tax base through those jobs being created, in addition, it tends to be a good balance and helps to tip the strategy towards the side of success in those communities and states that are thoughtful. Successful programs often will have a very good focus on transparency, full details of the proposed project, including construction through operations, dollars invested, jobs created, direct and indirect economic impacts to the community that is offering the incentive, and reporting to the government and community annually during the life of the incentives in terms of how they are proceeding and how successful they are. And finally, the inclusion of clawback provisions in the event that the development does not perform as originally proposed. You know, the success of business attraction efforts are not led by incentives. Incentives are a last piece of discussion in the overall dialogue between companies looking for a location to invest and communities trying to attract that investment. Incentives help with the bottom line if the proposed project is challenged by economics. And we believe that this tool is vital in Anchorage's ability to attract new investment to our community, not so much in the existing lines of business, such as retail or restaurants, national chains, things like that, but more in terms of bringing in new lines of business, such as the work that we are currently doing in partnership with the International Airport System, trying to attract new lines of business that put things on airplanes here in Anchorage. With the incredible asset that we have at the airport of 500 to 600 wide-body jets a week, an incentive could be very valuable when we are trying to bring in new lines of business that are looking to put things on airplanes and taking advantage of the logistics supply chain that we have here, but where our project economics are incredibly challenged by our high cost of doing business, our still relatively tight labor market, the cost of finding locations and building up those locations to service the business. All of these different factors can come into play where an incentive could be the final piece of the puzzle that helps tip the economics of the project into a profitability state, which would then generate the economic activity through the investment and the jobs created. It's our hope that the committee will pass this bill forward and that the legislature will ultimately pass this bill to provide another tool in the toolbox for local municipalities to make use of in a way that is effective in dealing with the economic challenges that we are dealing with as a state and to help to expand our economy into the future. Mr. Chair, I would be happy to answer any questions.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Pop. Are there any questions from the committee for Mr. Pop? Looks like we have Representative Parrish, then Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Mr. Pop, for your testimony. In looking at the potential of bringing in other businesses, hopefully new industries which wouldn't compete with the already present, what's the longest that you'd anticipate a municipal tax exemption being granted? What term of years? 10? It sounds in your view is too short, so what's the longest you'd anticipate?
So it isn't so much the duration. The duration will depend on the, through the chair. The duration is not necessarily the key element, although it is an important aspect that needs to have more flexibility in it. There are projects that are of a significant enough nature that could require a 10 or 15 or potentially even 20 year or more, depending on where things are being located and the size of the investment and the, you know, the amortization schedule that's being discussed and the long-term, you know, costs and challenges. Inversely, I believe that there are any number of projects that might benefit from a 3 or 5 year incentive, depending on the type of project that it is and where their economics are. I think the issue is that it's going to be a situational discussion that needs to be had between the community and the proposer seeking the incentive and the balancing of the overall, you know, project economics to figure out where the sweet spot lies in terms of answering that question.
And thank you, Mr. Pop. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Pop, just I wanted to clarify, you said that when you remember the Kenai Borough Assembly, you crafted a tax deferral mechanism that had not been used, and you said in Anchorage there had not been successful utilization. Did you mean of the state law or of a municipal ordinance?
As the municipal, through the chair, Representative Sadler, as a municipal ordinance in both communities, I believe that both ordinances conform to the state statute and pretty much mirror the language currently held in the state statute in its core. And to the best of my knowledge, neither community has successfully deployed that particular language for an economic development project. I'm aware of a couple of projects that have been done here at Anchorage using the deteriorated property statute and code of ordinance that has been adopted within the municipality, but those have been very challenging in some ways in the fact that they are, in my opinion, the right path for those projects, but the only path available. If there had been alternative, more effective economic development language on state statute and therefore on the municipal code of ordinances, we could have seen a much cleaner process.
Okay. Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Pop, through the chair. It sounds like there's been some good innovative thinking underlying this bill. Do you anticipate that municipality of Anchorage or Kenai or other boroughs might change their economic development statutes to reflect this? I don't know if it's necessary, but might they follow that lead?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I would be a partner with the municipality in trying to develop a code of ordinance if that is the will of the administration and the assembly, and we would be very much in favor of having that discussion and finding out whether or not we can adopt a code of ordinance that would make this tool more would make this tool available, because for all intents and purposes it's ink on a page but not really an effective and available tool to both the community to meet its economic development priorities as well as to potential new investors seeking to help balance the bottom right-hand number on the spreadsheet to bring it into the black to make the investment viable in their point of view. As far as other communities, sir, I would assume that they would have similar discussions and choose whether or not they want to go down that path.
Fair enough. Just a comment. I just would like to thank the Mr. Hilliard and his boss for bringing this kind of innovative economic development tool before us. I think this would be a good thing for the state and a good thing for communities. So I appreciate the detailed work you've done on this.
Thank you, Representative Sadler. Any further questions for Mr. Pop? Okay. Thank you then very much for your testimony, Mr. Pop. And we were supposed to have Ms. Carol Gore from Cook Inlet Housing Authority online, according to my script, but it looks like we actually have Mr. Jeff Judd. He's the executive director for real estate for the Cook Inlet Housing Authority. Mr. Judd, could you please state your name and affiliation for the record, and then you can go ahead with your testimony.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Jeff Judd, as you said, executive vice president of real estate activities for Cook Inlet Housing Authority.
Thank you. And you can testify at your will.
Okay, well, very good. I appreciate the opportunity. As you said, I'm speaking on behalf of Cook Inlet Housing Authority. Carol Gore was unfortunately already obligated for another activity this morning, so I'm trying to fill her shoes. I appreciate the opportunity. This bill does represent a valuable tool to municipalities to encourage and effectively help fund significant infrastructure costs associated with economic development opportunities that that a municipality would obviously like to pursue. The bill allows local governments flexibility on creating a funding mechanism effectively that is tailored to that local government's needs. And I think, as prior speakers indicated, the nature of the bill is really intended to allow those local governments to adopt a framework within their own legislative boundaries that effectively create a mechanism that ultimately fits every local government's particular situation. And there's obviously a shifting, if you will, I think, of tax burden to some extent. It's interesting. I would argue that ultimately the shift from an abatement from a particular
developer of that economic opportunity to other taxpayers, you know, could be, you know, ultimately really, if you think about it, if it's a public infrastructure improvement that's necessary to be incentivized in order for a development opportunity to come to fruition, that public infrastructure is ultimately going to be, you know, is the burden, if you will, of the local government. Road improvements, water, sewer, storm drainage infrastructure, improvements that are ultimately the responsibility of the local government and or the state. Those costs are inevitably going to be funded at some point by those local jurisdictions. And what this tool really allows is an opportunity for the private developer effectively to have a mechanism to fund them at a more expedient rate, if you will, you know, timely for their particular project to come to fruition now versus what otherwise might be 5 or 10 or 15 years out in the future when that local government actually has the funding to make the infrastructure that otherwise would be needed. And so ultimately, you know, the public burden, if you will, is still, regardless, is a public burden, and it just allows us an expediency of time in order to facilitate an economic development opportunity in the present time frame. As an example, Coastal Housing Authority has assembled approximately 13 properties in the Spinard neighborhood near the intersection of Spinard and 36th Avenue as part of a redevelopment effort that would involve both housing and retail and other commercial opportunities. And in order to develop those properties, we had to acquire them from multiple individual owners. They involved demolition activities of older properties that had, you know, run their useful life, if you will, and now require a significant improvement of the public roads and the water, sewer, and storm drainage facilities in order to meet current code. An estimate of the cost of that public infrastructure upgrade is in the range of $1 million, which causes what oftentimes is an infeasible housing and or mixed-use development opportunity to be just simply infeasible without some public support and in terms of how to pay for that public infrastructure improvement. The development effort that we're pursuing would result in a development, the total development outcome of approximately $20 million on these sites. And you know, part of that is obviously this public infrastructure cost of approximately $1 million that short of incentives and other tools that the local government might be able to provide, likely results in an infeasible project, at least in the short term. This bill would provide an opportunity to municipalities to abate those property taxes for a period of time to be determined by the local government, allowing for developers to effectively monetize those abated taxes in the form of private debt, which would then effectively fund the public infrastructure. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Judd. Are there any questions from the committee for Mr. Judd? Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not a question, just a comment. Mr. Judd, this is Representative Harriet Drummond. I represent the area your project is in and your offices, and it just delights me no end to see the progress Cook Inlet Housing is making with that intersection every time I go home. I'm looking forward to how changed it is when I finally get home from Juneau.
Well, thank you, Mr. Drummond. It's exciting to see the work that is taking place in that area. And as you know and point out, we started a pretty significant effort right at that intersection opposite essentially the west side of the properties that I mentioned a moment ago.
That's right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions or comments for Mr. Judd? All right. Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a couple. One is, it was my understanding from the earlier conversation that this wouldn't be an exemption available if you were going into competition with other pre-existing businesses. And it seems like housing is a good which is already being provided. in the Anchorage area, granted not in sufficient quantities, it sounds like, but would this, would you be providing a substitute good or service housing to others, other businesses in that area?
I don't think so. As you allude to, the supply of housing available in Anchorage is really in short supply. Our vacancy rates are very low, and much of our housing stock is, as you know, it was built in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and I think arguably is reaching the end of its useful life in terms of its quality, energy efficiency, and affordability. And ultimately, I think Mr. Pop has mentioned publicly and earlier the need, the opportunity for economic development is in large part a function of quality, affordable, diverse housing types available in the community. And when you look at the types of housing that have been developed in the Anchorage area over the last 20 years, largely it's single-family homes that are oftentimes beyond the financial means of the workers who are going to be working at these economic development facilities. And so the types of housing that have been created, frankly, is in limited supply based on limited funding resources and versus the cost to actually develop those developments. So I don't view the opportunity to utilize it perhaps for a housing development or a mixed-use development that includes housing and retail or commercial spaces. I don't really view it as competition to the existing stock because simply the types of housing that are likely to be developed or mixed-use facilities that are likely to be developed are not those that are otherwise being created in Anchorage presently, just simply due to the economics and the unviability of those sorts of housing developments.
And follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up, Representative Parrish.
Thank you. The next question is, of course, how long would you be shooting for a municipal tax exemption? 5 years with a 5-year extension during which you'd pay a portion of property tax is not adequate to the project, it sounds like at present, otherwise you'd not be calling in. So what would you be shooting for?
I think similar to Mr. Pop's comment, I think that it really depends upon the nature of the development, the scale of it, the locational aspects of that require certain types of public infrastructure improvements. In the case of our Spinard development, it's the assemblage of approximately 3 to 4 acres of land that likely results in a $20+ million redevelopment effort, and requiring extension of water and sewer and storm drainage and roads, and that roughly million dollar cost of that public infrastructure likely requires a 10 to 15 year abatement of taxes, if you will, based on the sort of the cash flow expectations of the development of that scale and its ability to effectively repay the debt, the private debt that's monetized through the abatement of taxes. But I think you could have smaller infill developments that require a lesser period of time, and you could have really large scale, larger, I suppose, than what we're proposing there in Spinard that might actually require a longer period of time. Again, I think dependent upon the nature of the availability of the existing public infrastructure that is adjacent to that proposed development.
Thank you, Mr. Judd. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Are there any further questions for Mr. Judd?
I'd like to ask Mr. McGee a couple.
Okay. Seeing no further questions for Mr. Judd, we did not notice public testimony on this bill. That will actually happen on Tuesday. And we will now go to additional discussion and committee questions. Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got an additional question for Mr. McGee.
Okay.
Mr. McGee, are you still available?
I'm still online.
Excellent. Thank you. One question is, once a municipality sets an exemption, and let's think of an extreme case where they grant an exemption for a few decades, as was suggested by one of the previous testifiers, could a future assembly or governing authority in that municipality shorten the duration of the exemption?
It would depend upon the specific language of the resolution that created the exemption, but generally, no. The decision of the prior body would be binding to future bodies for the duration of the specific as set out in the resolution that creates the exemption.
Thank you. The next question would be, what has been the smallest company to benefit from this? By their nature, small companies have less time for lobbying assemblies than big companies do.
I'm not aware of any small company applying for or receiving this type of exemption.
Thank you.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair to Mr. Hilliard. There's a specific reference to properties transferred under ANCSA, and can you help me understand why there are such specific references? Are there? I'll leave it at that.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, if you'd give me 1 minute. I see you're making reference there on
page 2, line 7, 8, 9.
I'd actually have to defer to Ms. Schutz. This is part of the existing statutory language, and it's not a question that's arisen in the previous versions of this bill, so if Ms. Schutz is available, maybe she can answer that question.
Ms. Schutz, are you available online still?
Yes, through the chair, this is Susie Schutz with Legislative Legal Services. I am not actually sure why that language on page 2, lines 8 to 9 was included in the original bill and is an existing law. I could look into that and get back to the committee.
That would be great if you could bring that back to us. I mean, next, we've got Representative Tallarico, followed by Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just take a short stab at this. I do believe that ANCSA established a 10-year tax exemption for all ANCSA-transferred land from the beginning of the taxable property or business for the first 10 years. So I would assume that that's actually put in there so that it's referenced to that, so that everyone's aware of that.
Excellent. Thank you, Representative Tallarico. And we will still have Ms. Schutz maybe try to confirm that, but that sounds like a very reasonable explanation. We'll go to Representative Parrish and then Representative Sadler.
Thank you. This is a question for Ms. Schutz or, of course, for Marty McGee if you want to punt. So in lines on page 2 from line 10 through 31, it creates there's a series of clauses from 17 to 31. I'm wondering if in existing statute it is all of these conditions must be met, namely the property has not been previously taxed as real or personal property by the municipality and is used in a trade or business in a way that and creates employment in the municipality. Is that the current interpretation of the bill? Because I see that now we're switching it to a district or clause where any one of the following applies.
Through the chair, Representative Parrish, this is Susie Schutz with Legislative Legal Services, through the chair. That's correct, but under subsection M of 29.45050, there's currently an and clause, and so there are three paragraphs that meet what economic development properties defined as. And so all three of those paragraphs must be met. The first paragraph that appears in this bill on page 2, lines 11 to 16, is actually the same language on page 3, lines 1 through 8. But here, there is an or at the end of that first paragraph on page 2, lines 16. And so economic development property would be defined to meet those criteria in paragraph 1, or under paragraph 2, one or more of the following would apply. And so any one of those three subparagraphs under paragraph 2, A, B, or C, would also qualify.
And
follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just for my benefit, previously it was expected that multiple categories should apply. Is that accurate?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
Was it previously the case that the property would have to meet more of these clauses?
Citizen of Paris versus CV Steps of Legislative Legal Services. The language is, the requirements are different under current law than they would be here. I mean, that subparagraph C is all new language that doesn't currently exist. So I would just say that the requirements would be different now as far as what would qualify as economic development property. And I would also point out that two things. One is an earlier comment that was made about whether economic development property is limited to real property. And this definition for economic development property on page 2 of the bill, line 8, and this is current statutory language, defines economic development property as real or personal property. And then right after that, it says including developed property. And then list out all of these ways that economic development property can be defined.
Hmm.
I know that wasn't exactly what you're getting at, but I wanted to clarify that economic development property could be real or personal property.
Thank you, Ms. Schutz.
Any further comments or questions for the committee regarding anything we've heard here on HB 156? Representative Tallarico.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to make a comment that I appreciate this coming forward. I actually think that local control, and I'll always say this, local government is the best government because it's closest to the people that are the most affected. There's no question about that. And I don't want to give everybody a history lesson or my perspective on history because everyone has their own, but I think to keep in mind as we work through, in particular, provisions in Title 29, I believe it was established years ago to create a guideline. We're not a very old state, and in particular, our borough governments aren't as old as the state. I think the first 8 or 9 were created in 1963, and since that point in time, they've gone along. So I think the crafters of this were incredibly intelligent in structuring a particular set of guidelines that these people would be able to follow. And that's where this comes into Title 29. It really established a guideline to give these new municipalities a baseline to get started. But I would have to say the crafters were also smart enough. I don't think they considered it to be a static document, that it may very well go through iterations and changes to adjust to our maturity as our local governments developed and got established. So at this point, I appreciate this coming forward because I think this is one of those sections where I would be very comfortable in saying most of these local governments are established to the point where they've got their process in order, they've got their public process in order, and they're making local economic decisions. So I think this is very appropriate. So I'm very supportive of this type of thing. I've got some different ideas, and if I might be able to just ask the sponsor one thing, and I don't know if this was a consideration, but on page 2 in line 27, it says an exemption or deferral on the property, and was there ever any consideration of potentially adding also language of a payment in lieu of taxes, a spot kind of between the deferral and between the exemption that might give the municipality even more flexibility for that?
Through the chair, Representative Tallarico, in the history of developing this bill last year and this year, There really hadn't been a discussion of payment in lieu of taxes. That's not to say that the sponsor would be necessarily opposed to it. My understanding, and again, I think Ms. Schutz might be able to speak to this with greater command, that you know we've got other provisions in Title 29 regarding payment in lieu of taxes.
Yeah.
The first reaction, I guess we'd be open to the discussion. It's never really been, in dealing with the municipalities that have interest and wanted us to bring this forward, it was never mentioned by them as something they were interested in, but that doesn't mean they weren't. It just was never a point of discussion.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further comment or questions?
Oh, yep.
Representative Delarue.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Part of the discussion earlier was someone had mentioned that it doesn't seem to be likely that we've got things that are taxed at different rates in different municipalities. You know, that one, we actually do have one piece of infrastructure that goes through several different municipalities that have different tax rates, and that's the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. It's got the North Slope Borough Property Tax and the Fairbanks North Star Borough Property Tax. They're at different rates, and so that, in a way, there's probably some case history. I'm sure that's been dealt with. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Tallarico. Any further, Representative Parrish?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'll express my curiosity about this bill. There are some things in it which give me real cause for pause, such as the suggestion that one assembly could bind future assemblies for an indeterminate period of time. I can readily conceive of a case in which a small town desperate for jobs would ratify a 99-year exemption for a business, because that business could say, well, you know, it's pretty marginal. We never expect large profits, but we're willing to come here to do you a favor if you give us this guarantee. And being in the legislature, not being able to bind future legislatures, I really see that as a valuable trait. And so with the bill as it stands, with the ability to bind future legislatures for, quote, a designated period, I can't help but to worry. I also tend to imagine that it will tip the playing field in favor of large businesses over small businesses, because generally large businesses, as we've had occasion to notice in this building, have pretty good lobbyists and are pretty persuasive people and can bring considerable contributions to bear. I will be happy to work with the bill's sponsors on addressing those concerns.
Thank you, Representative Parrish. Any further questions or comments for our bill sponsor, or anyone, really? Representative Sadler.
I would note for the record that the contributions of lobbyists are severely constrained by law in most cases.
Thank you, Representative Sadler. Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we've heard from numerous communities that this is a missing tool in their toolbox, and I took a look at last year's bill and saw that it was introduced kind of late in the legislature, and of course it was at the end of a legislature, so naturally it didn't go anywhere, but hopefully there'll be some progress this year, and I'm supportive of moving this bill out. And I believe local municipalities have the ability to make those sorts of economic development decisions for themselves and look into their own futures and see what kind of stable community they want to provide. Plus, if they're about to make a potential error, the public is right there and will show up in mass quantities if they think that they're going to be exempting a major property tax payer for too long of a period of time and thus shunting the burden over or sharing the burden among the rest of the property taxpayers within the municipality. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Drummond. Any further questions or comments? Okay. As I stated at the beginning of this, it is our intent to hold this over, and we will hear public testimony on Tuesday when Co-Chair Parrish takes over. As a further announcement to our fellow committee members, we will not be having Community and Regional Affairs on Saturday, so you may remove that from your schedule. And with that, I'm going to adjourn this meeting of the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee at 10:01 a.m.